This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Baraj aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm retired jockey Christina McManigal. I'm joining you from our Lexington, Kentucky studio, and I would like to thank everyone for joining us this evening. As I mentioned last week, you can now catch us on Sirius 219 XM 206. And, of course, you can also join us from the website, horseracingradio.net. A portion of the proceeds from this show go to benefit the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to permanently disabled riders who have suffered on-track life-altering injuries. If you are able to help, please visit the website, pdjf.org. Now, joining us this evening, he was the primary rider for Rapid Redux during his record-setting 2011 season. He's the strongest rider you'll ever see turning for home. He's racked up 2,990 victories and over $59 million in earnings. J.D. Acosta, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Christine.
J.D., it's great to have you here, and it's been a while since I've seen you. We used to ride together out east, and I know you're very, very busy. You ride day and night, yeah?
Yes, actually, I do. I stopped for a little while when I went to Philadelphia Park. Now it's a park. But, yeah, I was so used to doing, like, for 14 years back and forth day and night that sometimes I really don't know what to do with myself at nighttime.
Wow. Don't know what to do with yourself. Well, tell us, what's your schedule now? Where are you riding currently?
Well, actually, right now I'm mostly in Philadelphia. But now it's closed for 3 weeks, and I went back home, Charleston. But I never left home, so I basically always, on my day off, I always come back to Charleston. And, you know, it's a place that I always miss because I've been here for so many years that I really don't know. When I'm not here, sometimes I feel like I miss him too much. People don't like Charleston, but I actually do. It's, you know, it's home, so my house.
Well, I tell you what, JD, you're the king of Charlestown, and let's go back to the beginning. You know, you arrived in Charlestown when you first came here to the U.S., but let's take it back. Let's go back to the beginning. Tell us how you grew up and how you became involved.
Well, actually, I used to boxing, and I used to run in marathons in Puerto Rico, and I never was involved in the horses until I was, like, 16 years old. And it was because I used to work in the gas station, and everybody's like, hey, jockey, jockey. And I was like, I don't ride horses. I don't know what the people are talking about. Sorry for that, because I'm driving right now. And they told me that, oh, you're the jockey. And I never was in the horse before until one gentleman, he took me to the racetrack. He bring me the papers, and he's like, I want you to become a jockey. And I was like, okay, so give me the papers, and I give it a try. You know, if I'm bad, nobody going to complain because no one in my family was a jockey. You know, I work in the gas station, boxing, running, and doing everything I can to survive in Puerto Rico. And basically, that's what the way they introduced me to the racetrack. They just took me to there one time. So
you're working at a gas station. That's incredible, JD. And they saw, and you're very small, but you're strong. Like I said in the introduction, I've never seen anyone ride stronger down the lane. And that makes sense that boxing, that had to help. You already knew how to work out, how to become fit and strong. And tell us a little bit about your boxing career. I'm interested.
Well, yeah, I boxed in Puerto Rico for almost 7 years. I never was a pro. But I was training. I was actually running with Tito Trinidad. Every time he run and marathons and stuff like that to get fit, I was always running with him and Caimito, Puerto Rico, and Guaynabo. Guaynabo, Puerto Rico, too. So, and I was always involved in a lot of sports. I was actually a freak. I was come out of work, and I was running, and I was training, and I still doing it. I'm 34 years old, and I still running. I still training in my house. I got a little, like a little sparring place in my house that I still doing it. So, I never stop working out. I think that this horse racing sport, you always have to be fit to look good on the horses. So it's not just get on the horse in the morning and gallop and stuff like that. You have to be fit. I mean, I would say to jockeys, if you hook up with me down the lane, you better be strong. You better be ready with me because I don't get tired. So.
That's absolutely true, JD. I know very well from experience. But that's yeah. But JD, so you were fit, you were very athletic, and you never sat on a horse, and you were at a gas station, and then they tell you to become a jockey, and then do you go to the jockey school there in Puerto Rico?
Yeah, for 2 years. We have to be in the jockey school for 2 years. And they teach you how to be on the top of the horse. And the first month, basically, they teach you how to be a groom in case you don't make it as a jockey. So they teach you how to be a groom, how walker. You have to walk the horse and give you a bath. And then the teacher, they put you on the top of the horses and they show you how to grab the reins and how to put the position and everything. And, you know, it's like I say, it's like 20 of my group, I began with 20 kids. And only like 8 graduate from that year because it's tough.
Wow.
It's tough. You know, you have to work for 2 years for free, doing everything, galloping and everything. And I almost work and gallop almost 2,000 horses in 2 years. And you have to do it. If you don't do it, you're not going to make it. You know, a lot of the kids, they go over there and they thinking because my dad is a jockey, my brother is a jockey, why going to make it easy? It's not like that. You know, I was with Ramon Vasquez. He broke the record in Puerto Rico. That year, in 2002, when we graduated, but I mean, his father was a jockey, but if he don't work as hard as he do, he don't couldn't make it either because I was with a lot of brothers, cousins, uncles. I mean, family, the whole school was full of family from the jockeys, but only Ramon Vasquez and I, we make it in Puerto Rico, and then the rest of it, they got to come out to USA. And then on April 9, 2002, I decided to come to USA too, And you know, it become my career right here.
Wow, JD. So you rode races in Puerto Rico prior to coming to the U.S. after graduating?
Yeah, actually, I went 28 races in Puerto Rico that year.
Oh,
wow. 2002.
How does it work there? Do they have the same apprentice system as far as when you first start out? You're a 10-pound bug. Is that how you started?
Well, actually, it's been so long since I've been in Puerto Rico, but I don't think so. I think over there, you have a whole year, and you have to win 40 races. If you win only 40 races that year, you lose the bug with 40, I think, in Puerto Rico.
Okay.
And if you can win as many as you can in 1 year, but if you only win 40, that's it. You're done. Your career as a bug apprentice rider is done, I think. That's what I remember.
Yeah. But then you decided to come to the United States. Why did you decide that, JD?
For the same reason that I was with Ramon Vasquez, and my school was full of good riders too that year. I ran Rivera, Davila, you know, his family's there over there in Ohio, I think, in Boston. And everybody knows those kids. I mean, nobody knows J.D. Acasa. I was basically lonely over there. And Ramon Vasquez, everybody knows his father. He got a really good line of family of jockeys. And I was winning, actually. I was in the top four, maybe in the standings. But I decided to come to United States because my agent heard, so he told me that, you know, we're going to be here, but if we stay, we're going to win maybe 150 races the way that I was winning races. But we decided to come here because it was better for us. And that year, I mean, it showed that I was better because I went 200 races since April to December. I basically started racing in May because we took 1 month working right here, you know, to show the people that we can do it.
Right.
And then from May to December, we win almost 200 races right here.
Wow. You definitely made the right choice, JD. Now, you've mentioned a couple of times how a lot of the people in the school had family who were jockeys, and that's how the whole industry really is. It's rare that you see someone ride races with no family connections, and I was kind of in a similar situation, JD, but did you feel like you had to work harder to prove yourself, given that nobody really knew who you were?
Yes, you do. Because everybody look at the other kids' families. Everybody want to know if they're going to become like their families, you know. And nobody look at you if you don't have no family, like, okay, who's this kid?
Yeah.
Who's he belong to? So
exactly.
I have to prove myself to everybody out, to the trainers, you know, and they're tough, you know, because it's like 300 riders over there in Puerto Rico. Right? Every year, like 10, 20 graduate from jockey school, and you have to prove yourself that you can become one of the good ones over there.
It had to be difficult as well because you got a fairly late start. Most of the kids who grew up in the industry, you know, they were galloping horses as soon as they could walk. So for you to ride late, to learn late, was that more difficult, or did you feel like you just had a knack for it as soon as you got on the back of a horse?
I got to be honest with you. I don't think it was hard for me because I feel like if you're an athlete and everything becomes natural, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't say that I'm great at riding, you know, not perfect, but I feel like it was a little easy for me just because I was fit too, and the position they teach me and everything just become really, really easy for me to do it. So I just had to pay attention to what they teach me, and that was it.
That definitely makes sense. JD Acosta joining us tonight on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. So, JD, you moved to the United States. What track did you start out first?
My first racetrack that I rode was Philadelphia Park, the first one. I was actually in Delaware because the owner at that time, I think my agent talked to the owner and they want to bring a boat boy. I think his name was Rick. I think he passed away. he bring me from Puerto Rico. But I only worked for almost a month until I rode my first horse in Philadelphia. I remember the horse name and everything. I can never remember the horse. I can never forget the horse name, but his name was Señor Mágico. He's like Magical Senior in English, but it was a big launch ad. We almost don't make it. We had so much trouble on the street, on the road to Philadelphia. Uh-huh. The horse run without Lasix and anything, and I barely make it on the gate, and they let me ride, and I finished last, but I was so happy that I rode a horse in the United States. You know.
Wow, that's awesome. How was it different from riding in the United States versus riding in Puerto Rico? Was it different as far as the other jockeys, the riding style? Was it different at all?
Well, it was a little bit, not much, because in Philadelphia it was a lot of people from Puerto Rico.
Right.
So they ride basically almost like in Puerto Rico too. So, you know, they don't ride as tight like California or New York at that time. You know, some racetrack, they like to ride really tight and Philly, they, you know, they're a little more separate to each other. They don't like to ride as tight in Philadelphia. So it was actually almost the same for me. So
no, that's definitely true, JD. I remember when I first arrived, I rode at Philadelphia as well. And when I first got there, and I was always taught, you know, save ground, stay on the rail. And you see at Philadelphia, they don't really do that too much. And I later found out the track is known to be somewhat deeper down there on the rail. And you're riding there now, JD. Is that still true?
I guess. I win many races in the rail. I don't like to lose that rail when I'm in front. I like to be close to the front of the lead. And when I'm in the rail, I don't like to lose the rail. And the train is over there. They normally don't like to stay in the rail.
Yeah.
I don't know. I actually run in this racetrack before the races. I think it's almost the same, but it has to be a reason why they don't like to be over there in the rail. So,
yeah.
You know, I learned with the time that they don't like to be in the rail. They don't want to be in the rail.
Well, you might as well take that spot then, right, JD?
Yeah.
Did you just say you run the track before the races?
Yes, every day.
Every single day. Wow.
Yeah. I do it in Charleston. I do it in Philly.
Is that to just to stay fit, or is it to help kind of get a feel for the track?
I think it's both. Sometimes I like to run just to see how the track feels, because they work different ways almost every day at the racetrack. So if I see they take too much dirt out of the racetrack, I like to stay when they take the dirt out. And I think sometimes everything helps. Every little thing helps on the racetrack, you know.
No, that's definitely true. To get a feel for the track has to be beneficial, JD. How else do you prepare for a race? You're always so prepared, and how do you do that?
What exactly do you mean?
Like, do you study the races? Do you watch replays? Do you like to work the horse before you ride the horse? What do you like to do?
Well, sometimes I do watch a replay. Normally with a racing program and the racing form is easier. Right now with the replay, that really helped because I think you see that if the horse have any bad habit or if he don't like to go inside. But now with the replay, it's really easy. Sometimes if I don't know the horse, I like to watch a replay. That really helped big time, more than anything, I think. It's like when you go boxing, you like to see the opponent, how they fight. So I think the replay really helps. I don't watch them a lot, I got to be honest with you, but I do. If I don't know the horse, I like to watch a replay to see how the horse run or things like that. So I think that's one of the main things. And I don't used to work a lot in the morning because I used to ride in Laurel and Charleston every day. So I used to ride so many in Laurel and so many in Charleston that I really don't have time to work. And that's another thing that I think if you work the horses in the morning, you really know the horse better. Mm. But I win so many races, you know, like that. But it's tough. It's tough. Sometimes I think if I used to work in the morning, I probably work more races than I did. And I almost win 3,000 races. But I would say that if I used to work in the morning, at least for maybe five of those years that I don't work, I could have won more races than the races that I did, I think. So.
Yeah, but that, my gosh, that would be incredibly tough. I mean, to ride day and night and then to get up early in the morning to go work horses, that's a lot. That's a lot on your body. You know, you need sleep, obviously, whenever you're an athlete especially. But I remember those nights, JD, and I didn't do that regularly, but riding at Laurel Park during the day and then shipping down to Charlestown or Penn National at night, those were really long days. I can't imagine doing that all the time. That's incredible. That's incredible. And so let me ask you, JD, because this is very important when you first start out riding. Were you an apprentice when you first came here to the States then, yeah?
Yes, I was. I went 28 races in Puerto Rico from January 1st to April 9th, 2002. I went 28. So I basically had the whole year when I came to the United States. And so I went my fifth race in Puerto Rico.
Wow. And how many? How many races did you win with the Buck?
With my Buck?
Yes.
I went 200 that year. Wow. In 2002, I went 200 races.
That's definitely impressive. That's yeah, good. And yeah, that's like you said, you have to ride as much as possible night and day all over the place.
It was a little tougher because I live in, at that time, we live in Delaware Park. And then from Delaware Park, my agent, he was driving me from Delaware to Charlestown at nighttime. So that was 2 hours. And that was tough because sometimes I was so tired. And then I had to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning after the races in Charlestown. It was almost 12 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. We had to drive back to Delaware. And then we get up in the morning over there. That was a really tough time, but we make it.
Yeah, you're getting back at 2 o'clock in the morning, waking up at six. That's wow.
Yeah,
that's
almost
a lot.
Almost every day. Almost every day.
Wow. I heard a rumor, JD, that you, when you first arrived here to the States, you were sleeping in a tack room on the floor.
Yes, I was. I was. And the Rick Mansion right there in the Delaware Park, they gave us a little room for us. For me and my agent and his father was here, Harrison Rodriguez too, Harrison Rodriguez's father. And we basically sleeping on the floor.
Wow.
And it was so cold because it was April. I mean, in Puerto Rico and Dominican Republic, I'm Dominican, and you are not used to being on the cold, right? There's 90 degrees weather the whole year. And then when I came here, it was snowing, cold. The first horse that I get on the morning, I fell because I forgot to tie the saddle. And it was so cold. I don't have no gloves. I don't have no mask. I don't have anything. So I had to get on the first horse with nothing on. And it was so cold for me that I was breathing the horse. And I fell. I remember that I fell down the stretch. And I remember Scott Lake. He was one of the first ones that showed up. Hey, Jackie, are you okay? And I don't speak no English at that time. Not at all. I mean, not at all.
Really?
And I remember everybody talking to me, but I don't know what they're saying. I was so desperate. But I was okay. I hit the ground hard, but You know, it was a little funny right now that I remember, but it was a little scary.
I would say so. Yeah, I don't miss the days of working horses when it's 0 degrees outside. That's for sure. Especially for you when you're not used to it. That has to be extra difficult. And what you just said a minute ago surprised me. So you came here and you didn't speak any English.
Not at all. I mean, wow. I still now my agent making fun of me because one time I went a horse and the trainer is like, "How the horse run?" And I say, "Well, the horse run on Cribal." And my agent's like, "What is on Cribal?" I say, "Wow, I guess unbelievable." You know, I say it to him and he translated and he told the trainer, he's like, "He said the horse run unbelievable. The horse run good." And I remember that I said on Cribal. I make that up, but I tried to say something nice to the trainer. And my agent still making fun of me for that.
That's hilarious. So how did you eventually learn? Did your agent speak English, I'm assuming?
Yes, he did. He was different because he was Puerto Rican, but he speak English. He's white as a paper. And he looked American, too. So he was really easy for him. Before every race, he got to give me the instructions because I really don't know what the trainer is going to tell me that time. But he really teach me a lot. And then I have a girlfriend. She was American. She teach me a lot, too, at that time, too. She really helped me because she really teach me a lot, too, at that time.
Yeah, that had to be incredibly tough. And like you said, the instructions, that's too funny. I mean, I didn't even think about that. You go to the paddock, and if you can't understand what the trainer's trying to tell you, that's not a good situation. So that's mm-hmm. How long did it take before you were able to speak English with the trainers?
Well, I'm not perfect. I'm not speaking any perfect right now, but like that I can understand the trainers and stuff like that. It took me like probably 3 months until I can talk to them something, because I normally like to study a lot and I'm really, you know, I like to read. And at that time I read every sign. Every time Harrison was driving from Philadelphia, from Delaware, or from Laurel, he told me like, read every sign that you see in the street. And that was really going to teach you quick. So that really helped big time too. So.
Jockey J.D. Acosta joining me on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. So, J.D., you're living in a tack room in Delaware for a little while. You're riding at Philadelphia, now Parks. And tell me about the moment you and your agent decided to travel to Charlestown permanently.
Well, I think because I had the book. It was tough in Delaware. It was tough. I only win 13 races with my boss. I mean, Ramon Domingo was there, Joe Rockax Jr., Michael McCarthy, Edgar Prado. I mean, it was a field full of jockeys. You know, it was tough colony. It was tough colony. And I only win 13 races. So in Charleston, every time I come here to Charleston, I win. I think I win my first 8 races that I rode. In Charleston, it was basically easy for me, and the people give me more chances. So we decided to move back to Charleston. And I said, "Well, we gotta go where we win. So if that's Charleston, let's go." And I mean, my agent never complained. Every time I say, "Let's move to one place," and that was it. And I mean, I was glad the trainer really basically take me like his son. And since that time in Charleston, they always liked me and they always give me a chance and basically the best horses. So I was really grateful for that.
You mentioned the tough colony at Delaware. That's an incredibly talented group of riders there. Did any of those riders kind of take you under their wing and help you out? Did you learn anything specific from such great riders?
Well, actually, yes. When I come to USA, everybody in Puerto Rico talk about Johnny B because he's like that, you know. Sorry. His legacy and all the things he's doing is great, you know. And you know, John Velasquez, and there are so many riders over there that they love in Puerto Rico. But when I come here to the United States, I love the way a couple riders look at the horses. Jerry Bailey was my favorite, and Harry Vega. And I always like to look Jerry Bailey the way he looked at the horses. For me, he was really, really great rider. I always tried to copy the way he's left-handed. And, you know, I tried to take something from his style. Joe Rocco Jr. was amazing, too, and Ramon Dominguez, for me, I think he's got like the best hands in the horses. Mm. He's unbelievable. I think he's one of the greatest rider I've ever seen in my life. So probably I'm never going to see another one like Ramon. I always tell him that he's my hero. So
nice.
Ramon is something else. So.
He's incredible. We had him on the show a couple weeks ago, and now he's in the Hall of Fame, and so happy for him. He is incredibly talented. That's just incredible. And so being around such talented jockeys had to teach you so much, and you said you would watch riders and you would want to pick up on their style, that you like the way they look on a horse or how they hit left-handed, and you tried to copy that. And then you went to Charlestown to the bull ring, JD. And I tell you what, I remember the first time I rode at Charlestown. It's a different experience, most definitely. And how was that for you? Do you remember the riding there for the very first time on the bull ring?
Yes, I did. Actually, I do. The first horse that I rode in Charleston, it was 4.5. I never rode 4.5 before in my life. And the horse name was Right Decision. Julio Cartagena used to train the horse. And he said, just hold on tight because he's going to take you to the wire. And I was like, okay. And that horse was so fast that 25 breaks on the gate, I didn't see the group. And I mean, since that, the people might be thinking, that, I mean, I'm good leaving the gate. But the horse, they really teach you a lot. I mean, you really learn a lot in Charleston. I would say that if you ride in Charleston, you ride anywhere else because that place is so tight. I went down so many times that I don't even remember. But, I mean, they teach you that if you cannot be there, take back. And if you want to be there, just, you know, decide to make you move, because if you're not there, take back. Now you're going to go down. Not because the riders, they want to drop you. It's just the track is so small. Only three horses basically feed in that turn. And you don't want to be in the middle between horses when they making that turn 6.5 furlong or in that quarter, on the quarter per mile, you know. So you want to be behind or in front. But most of it, you want to be in front because the track is so small that by the time that you make your move, the race could be over. So
exactly. Now it's. I remember the first time, JD, I rode there, and I remember I was driving up from Philadelphia, and it was storming so bad the whole trip. And I get there, and I want to say it was the race before I was supposed to ride. I don't know if you remember this day, but there was a spill in the race because of the exact kind of situation you described. Someone was in too tight and clipped heels and went down, but the horse was towards the front, so the entire field but one horse, everyone went down.
Of course, I remember that, and you too.
Yeah, and I tell you what, that was a race before I was supposed to ride. I was like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do here? Wow.
Yeah, I remember that. It was Carlos Marrero went down in front, and I remember also Pereira from Montanier who win the race, and he was like eight horse fields, and only one made it to the race. And it was actually official because, you know, it wasn't between the race, nothing happened before the race. It wasn't in the race, and they had to make the horse the race official. And it was crazy. That was really bad. That was basically one of the worst that we have right
here. Yeah, definitely. And it was a scary thing to watch. But like you said, if you can ride at Charlestown, you can ride anywhere. And JD, we got to go to commercial break. We'll continue our visit. Stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network, but the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit pdjf.org and start making a difference today.
You can make money at the track this summer. Some of the best thoroughbred racing of the year is on tap at Saratoga, Del Mar, Arlington Park, Monmouth Park, and Woodbine, so the opportunities abound. With insightful handicapping, inside information, and worthwhile wagers at all your favorite resort tracks. Racing fans from coast to coast use PopeJude.com's reports every weekend as another set of eyes on the past performances to affirm their own choices or consider a horse they may have dismissed. You can make money at the track this summer. Go to PopeJude.com to learn more. That's PopeJude.com.
Good evening, everyone. This is Corey Johnson for the weekly Jockey Talk 360 report. Jose Ortiz's lucky number was 13 last week. The hot-riding young rider scored 13 victories, the most in North America, and was named the Jockey's Guild Jockey of the Week. The award is voted on by a panel of experts, and it's among the representatives of the Jockey's Guild. Ortiz, a 22-year-old native of Puerto Rico, is battling with his older brother, Irad, and Javier Castellano for leading rider at Saratoga. Jose has visited the Saratoga's winner's circle 38 times, good for second place in the standings. Shifting our attention to the national standings, Jose is in second place with 233 wins. He's 5 wins behind Antonio Gallardo. When you take a look at the earnings by their mounts, Javier Castellano is ranked number one at $14.7 million. Irad Ortiz is at $14.5 million, and Jose is at $14.3 million. So the top three nationally are very tight. When you drop down to fourth place, you get the always steady, always reliable Johnny Velasquez. Looking at the fifth place ranked jockey, that's Florent Giroux. You might remember Florent was the 2015 most improved rider in the Jockey's Guild, and last year his mounts earned $10.2 million. To illustrate how well Florent is doing this year, his mounts have already earned $10.5 million, more than the entire year last year. Now I'd like to look at a couple of comebacks. There's a lot of fun that's going to be going on coming up because Calvin Burrell is coming out of retirement. He expects to ride later this month, and I look for him to be a real force at Kentucky Downs, where he's the all-time winningest rider. And then also Julien Leperoux. He was cleared by his doctor yesterday, and he's going to begin working horses very soon, and he expects to come back to the races around the 1st of September. As you may or may not remember, Leperoux injured his wrist in a starting gate accident. So it's good to see both those top riders coming back to action. That's our report this week for Jockey Talk 360, and this has been Corey Johnson.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
As they make the turn in, all systems go now for Rapid Redux, who turns them in. Rapid Redux has asked the question, opens a bit now, an awesome rhythm in second, who's been in pursuit throughout. Gold Casing, then Sarges and Grunwald. Furlong and a half left to go to the second wire. J.D. Acosta asking Rapid Redux for a little bit more. Awesome rhythm came close to him last time. Can he get Rapid Redux this time? A 16th of a mile out. Rapid Redux holding Awesome Rhythm. Rapid Redux digging down. Awesome Rhythm on the outside. The beat goes on. The streak goes on. Rapid Redux, a 22nd consecutive win.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Christina McManigle joined tonight by jockey J.D. Acosta. J.D., we just heard the replay of your victory aboard Rapid Redux, his 22nd consecutive victory. And do you remember that race?
Yes, I do. I win so many races, and that was one of the days that I was so nervous, because I was like, man, I really don't want to mess this one up.
you didn't mess it up.
And the whole race is like, everything is a factor, you know, and I was like, what happened with the horse tumble? What happened if the horse comes from off the pace? He was always in front, and I was like, man, I really don't want to mess this one up. Everybody was watching. I was like, oh, boy.
It's so funny to hear you say that, JD, because, you know, in the room, and I've you know, like I said, ridden with you multiple times. You just seem so chill and relaxed and calm, and but inside you were a little bit nervous that day, yeah?
Actually, I did. I think that was one of the couple of times that I was nervous riding horses. Not even the first horse that I rode in my career.
Wow.
I was nervous. I was like normal, you know. It's like, I would say this is like a working in the morning. I mean, you don't have to be nervous. I rode any kind of race you ride, big one, little one. Sometimes you get into emotions because you don't want to mess the race up. You want to win. I mean, I'm kind of greedy. I like to win everything that I ride. And I really don't want to mess up Robbie Redux that day.
No. That was his final victory, too. What a horse. What was he like to ride? Like you said, I mean, he always went to the front, and you're so good out of the gate. But what was he like to ride?
He was really easy because he was so fast leaving the gate that you only have to hold him and just try to, you know, not let it go too fast earlier. Because he can win in 4.5, 1 mile and 8, 6 foot long, six and a half, 7 foot long. Anywhere you put him, he was always breaking fast, and you only have to, you know, just try to plug the first quarter and the second quarter and not let him go too fast and just let it finish in the end. But every time he got a horse getting next to him, he just start running by himself. You don't really have to ask him on anything.
Wow.
Because he's one of those horses, they start moving the ears, and when he feels the horse is coming, he put the ear back, and you feel them when the horse is coming. You're like, yep, they come. And that was it.
That's awesome. Had to be such an experience riding a horse like that. How did you get the mount aboard Rapid Redux?
Well, at that time, I was riding every day for Robert Cole. He's the owner. He was the owner of Rapid Redux, and I was used to ride everything for him, so I think they claimed the horse. Him and Davey Wells, he was the trainer. And just because I was riding basically almost everything for Davey, for Robert Cole and Charleston, he gave me the chance to ride him back. But every time he sent it to Laurel, when he sent it to Laurel, somebody else ride him in Laurel, or somebody else ride him in a dollar racetrack like the National. He liked to use the top riders on those tracks. So I think, you know, because I was in the top in Charleston, he put me on. So
was that a little bit? I looked up the past performances, of course, on Rapid Redux, and I thought that. I thought, you know, if I was riding Rapid Redux, you know, you had 7 victories out of, you know, last time I counted, maybe I counted wrong, but you had multiple victories aboard this horse. You were the primary rider. Was it a little bit maybe frustrating when they would ship out of town and you couldn't ship with the horse, or was that just you were fine with that?
No, actually, I actually want to ride the horse everywhere he goes.
Yeah.
One time he ran in Penn National, and I was late. I got into an accident, and when I get there, they take me off, and they put one of the riders from Penn National, and he win the race. Oh. But every time, when he went to Mountaineer, they put the Sean Parker. When he went to Ohio, they put the leading rider in Ohio. So Robert Cole is like that. He's, you know, he likes to put the top riders and the places that he's shipping the horses. So I think that's one of the reasons that he don't like to use the main rider on that horse.
Sure.
And I want to ride him everywhere he goes, because I think that I win a race in every racetrack that I ride, so I know I can win with the horse too.
Oh yeah. Was he the nicest horse you've ever ridden?
He's one of the top. I have a couple one in my heart that, you know, that I rode that I really never forgot those horses. So, of course, he's one of the top just for the things that he did. He was one of the toughest horses. He put a really, really tough fight down the stretch, but, you know, he's in the top.
Who else would make that list?
Well, I had Sweet Goodbye. The trainer was Chris Grove.
Mm-hmm.
I win, I think, like 13 state races with that mare. She broke down with me working in Delaware one time in the morning.
Mm.
She won. I said goodbye, bye, Steve. I win so many big courses right here. That not that I win big races, because I win all the bigger races in Charleston too. But I only ride the horse maybe one time, and you know, I feel like it's not like it doesn't count. But when you win the horse maybe more than 5 times, you gotta start get into like different bond with those horses.
You get attached. You feel like, you know, you've been part of the whole success, you know, and that definitely makes sense. And Sweet Goodbye, She won the Grade 2 Barbara Fritchie Handicap. How about that race? Tell us about your victory in that the Barbara Fritchie.
Oh yeah, yeah. She was tough. She ran like a boy. I mean, she was tough. She was tough in the morning. She was tough in the afternoon. And when they put him in that race, it was a Marion Million. I think I win the Marion Million and the Barbara Fritchie, and I think I win the Sugar Maple in Charlestown with her.
Wow.
So she was a tough cookie. And every time she can come up the page, she can go in front, close to the lead. And that day that I win the Barbara Fritchie, that was one of the biggest, I mean, not the biggest race that I ever win, but it was so emotional for me because, you know, winning Maryland, I was like to win big races in Maryland because that's one of my hometown too. So when I win that race, I think I even cried that day.
I would cry too, JD. My gosh, that had to be such a good feeling. How about Call of a Lion?
Oh my Lord, Call of a Lion. Yeah, she was another one that Charlie Frog was the trainer and owner, and he, you know, every time I think I went on Charleston, I went like seven straight and Laurel with her.
Wow.
I think I went like one of the Maryland Million Stakes. I think it was 50,000, but you know, it was a great emotion too for me because I never thought that she was gonna win a state race, and she did. And then she broke down with me too in one race, and Laurel. That was a really sad day for me too.
Oh my goodness! Tell me about, you mentioned a couple horses breaking down, and you mentioned earlier a couple spills you had in Charlestown, and of course, you know, it's the only sport where an ambulance follows us around the track. Tell us about, have you had many injuries, JD?
You had like 7 hours because I have so many broken bones.
That's terrible. Oh my gosh.
I broke my ribs, my finger, my clavicle, my shoulder, my right clavicle, my left shoulder twice in Philadelphia one in Delaware, my right clavicle, collarbone in Charleston. I messed up my right knee in Charleston and I went down like a month ago and I think I hurt my left knee. I broke my toes. I have maybe like 3 or 4 concussions.
It's a long list, JD.
Yeah.
So,
you know, that don't take me back. I gotta keep going, you know.
How, describe to our audience how you do that. Whenever you have a spill, and maybe, you know, especially maybe your first big spill, your first major spill, how do you get back out there? Why do you want to get back out there, first of all? And second of all, how do you mentally do that? You know, convince yourself it's okay, you're not scared or anything like that. How do you do that?
Well, my first one was when I was a bug boy, when I was an apprentice. I was passing horses, and I think one guy went outside of me, and then he dropped me. Mm. And I wake up in the hospital, looking at the lights in the hospital, and I was tied in the bed. And my agent's like, don't move. You know, Herschel, he was telling me to not move. And I was like, what happened? He's like, you got dropped. They dropped you on the racetrack. Nothing happened with me, but I think I have really bad concussion because I don't remember what happened exactly at that time. And I remember that one. That was my first one. And I don't think I'm ever going to forget that one.
Yeah.
And since that, I had too many that, you know.
I think I had too many.
Really.
Yeah. How do you do that, though, whenever you recovered from that first spill? How do you get a leg back over a horse, and how are you okay with that? Did you ever feel nervous or anything?
Yes, I think at that time when I passed exactly the same spot that I went down, you think about it because it's like you want to pass that part quick. You want to went by really fast. You don't want to... It's like that part is coming and you want to go away really fast from that same spot. And it's kind of scary because every time you go down, you always remember. It doesn't matter who you are, you're always going to remember where you go down, how you go down, because it's tough. You know, it's really, really hard. And every time you went down and you get up, and if nothing happened to me, I like to ride back to back. But if I feel sore, I like to take the day off or something and come back the next day and just, you know, reflect on the accident and just come back the next day.
Come back strong. Exactly.
Yeah, but you're always thinking about it.
It's funny you mentioned that. I remember I had a bad spill at Delaware Park, and I came back, you know, a month later, whatever it was, and I had a horse shipping into Delaware Park on the turf. The spill happened on the turf, and I wasn't scared. It's just you have, like you said, you have that in the back of your mind, and you're like, ooh, okay, I guess I'll do this. And the horse won anyway, so it turned out to be a good story. Then I didn't mind the turf anymore. But but you're right. You think about it, but you can't dwell on it. You can't focus on that. Maybe just the first time you're back on the track, you might think about it in the back of your mind, but you can't focus on it. And when you love what you do, well, you don't mind the spills so much. It's easier to come back when you can't wait to ride again, of course. But
yeah, I know. It's really tough because I would say this. I think the Jackies, we are one of the toughest athletes out there. I mean, I have my respect for the football players, my respect for the basketball players, for the soccer players, for baseball players, for everything. But I think that we are one of the toughest athletes out there because we basically don't eat well. We have to struggle a lot with the weight. We have to suffer in the hot box. We have to suffer in not eating. We have to suffer in not sleeping. And when the accidents happen, sometimes we have to came back. And we're not 100%. I don't think there's any jockey that came back 100% after they have any accident. We have to came back, and we have to support our families. And sometimes they say if you broke your clavicle, and they say 8 weeks, we come back with six weeks. And we told the doctor, I said, we had to come back at six. So, and that happened to everyone out there. So I think we are one of the toughest athletes out there. And I have my respect for every jockey because, you know, I know the public, they are tough sometimes with us. And I respect them because they bet their money on us. But sometimes it's tough because I'm really greedy. I want to win everything. And sometimes when we don't win, you know, we hear, oh, what happened with you? Most of it with me because I was one of the toughest in Charleston, one of the top leaders in Charleston. And when we don't win, when I don't win a race, sometimes the public is like, what happened, JD? How can you don't win that one? You know, I was like, bro, I want to win everything. You think I want to be here just for fun? You know, it's tough. It's tough. It's tough. I want to win everything. Everywhere I go, it doesn't matter here in Charleston, Laurel, Philadelphia, New York, everywhere I go, I like to win my race. I don't care what kind of horse it is.
Jockey J.D. Acosta joining me on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. J.D., you mentioned along your list of things that make the career of being a jockey so difficult, weight. Do you have problems with your weight? Is that tough for you?
Well, actually, you know what? I was really light until the last 3 years, basically. I was basically 110 pounds, and I was one of these guys that I like to eat everything. But, you know, when you turn 30, it starts getting harder on your body. And people tell me before, and I don't believe it, until as soon as I turn 30, I was like, oh, boy,
oh,
what
no.
is this? Yeah. I was like, well, how about you? Here we go. I've been going up a little bit. Sometimes I have to lose, yeah. I like to go in the hot box because I like to jump rope. I like to hit a back. I got punching backs in the hot box. And before I used to do it just for fun. Now sometimes I have to, yeah, if I ride a horse with 16 or 15 or something like that, I have to lose 3 or 4 pounds just to make the weight.
Yeah. Now you have me nervous, JD. I'm not far away from 30 myself. No, I'm nervous.
Don't worry, you'll be okay.
Okay, good. What do you eat on a race day? Like, what's your schedule eating-wise?
Oh, boy, my racing day?
Yeah.
I almost don't eat almost nothing. I like to get something in the morning. I used to get eat like a little sandwich in the morning. I was not big, something small, but now I like to eat a little soup and just pass the whole day sometimes with the soup in the morning right before the racing because I really don't like to ride horses hungry.
Yeah.
I like to feel strong a little bit, but you don't want to put a lot of food in your stomach because then you don't know if anything happened and you got to go to the hospital and they got to do something to you. So I think you have to put something in your stomach, but I can't get into a habit. You know, it's too many bad habits that I don't want to get into it. You know, and I have my respect for the people that are doing it, but I don't. I like just to take care of myself and not eat much anyway. So.
No, and like you said, you know, a lot of it's tough for a lot of riders and the weights are people as a whole are getting bigger and the weights don't change. And it's really tough to be an athlete and to starve yourself, as you said, some jockeys unfortunately resort to other methods of losing weight, which in the long run are really bad for your health. But it's also not fun to be hungry all the time, right, GD? But
I know. And that's why I say I have so much respect for anybody that do whatever they got to do to lose weight, you know, because you got to do what you got to do. I mean, it's our career. I understand that you got to make it. You know, you used to ride horses too. You know, we got to make it anywhere we can, so.
It's tough, JD. It's tough. It's not easy. So, JD, I'm looking here. You have 2,990 wins, only 10 away from that big number. And do you feel like, I know we've had guests on the show before who've said, you know, oh, my gosh, I can't wait to get, you know, the kind of monkey off your back. Do you feel pressure now? You know, are people talking about it to you? Or, you know, is it, or do you just not really think about it?
You know, that monkey, every time you're going to hit a mark, he always jumping you back.
That's right. That's right.
I don't know what the reason for that thing, but it's funny, you know. I really don't try to put pressure as much if I do when I was getting close to my first win or my 2000 win. I think, you know, it's going to happen. I don't know why that slump always come, but I think now I go to Timonium, you know, Timonium Fair in Maryland, and I ride the best horses over there too, so I hope I kill that monkey quick out of my back because I don't want to have it for too long.
I'm sure, like you said, Timonium, yeah, you'll get that big win in Timonium most definitely. Tell us about Timonium. I don't know if a lot of people know about the way the track is there. Tell us about Timonium.
Timonium is a really small racetrack. I think it's a 5-foot-long track. It's really, really small. They racing from there from 4-foot-long to 1.8 miles. But it's only 5-foot-long track, so you can imagine how small it is. Yeah. I love the racetrack because I always win so many races. People don't like to go over there, really, and I understand because it's too small. The track is too small. The turns are too sharp, too narrow, and it's worse than Charleston. It's more dangerous than Charleston.
Yeah.
And that's why so many riders decide not to go over there. They don't want to take any chances, you know, to get her over there and lose their horses, the good horses on the big track. But I don't. I think if you're going to get hurt, you're going to get hurt anywhere.
Yeah.
And Timonium, I mean, you have to take care of yourself anywhere you go. And I think I love Timonium. I like the surface. Basically the same stewards from Maryland and the same people from Maryland. So I know we take care of each other over there. So it's a little tough, but I like the racetrack. I think anywhere you win a race is... I'm proud anywhere I win the race. I don't care where I win the race. I mean, it's tough to win one.
Yeah.
And if I can win one in Timonium, I'm going to win my win in Timonium. So.
I know, JD, it's the only racetrack I've ever been to where there's a Ferris wheel in the background.
<That's>,
that was interesting. First time I rode there, I'm like, whoa, what? It's a fun place, though. So, JD, what are your goals for the future? Do you ever plan to go somewhere like New York or anywhere like that? Or what are your long-term goals for your career?
I got to be honest with you. I always thought and go to California. I think, I don't know why. I would like to try New York. I try New York a little bit. And it's not that it's tough. Of course it's tough because if you go without... It doesn't matter if I win 3,000 races over there. If I, you know, people are going to look at me as the Charleston rider or the Maryland rider. You know, you have to go with a big outfit that back you up anywhere you go. And New York is beautiful. The place over there is unbelievable. I rode over there for like a month. But it's really tough. But I know I can make it if I stay there. But I have my family right here in West Virginia and Charleston. And it's really tough. I got 3 girls. And it's really tough, and, you know, you're over there in New York, your family's over here, and you know, it's tough. And my goals are, before I retire, of course, I do want to go to California. That's one place that I would like to try, because I know I can do it. I can do it. I have to work hard, but I know I can do it. I would love to try California. And I want to win. My goal was when I start the beginning, actually, I always think and pass Junior Cordero on winning. It's like more than 7,000 winning.
Yeah.
And that was my goal. I say, before I retire, if I can, and that was from the first day that I started riding horses. I say, my goal is going to be
win past Junior Cordero and winning. Pass that guy. If I pass Junior Cordero and winning, I'd be happy.
It's tough. I love it. I love it. Folks, you heard it here first. He's going to pass Angel Cordero and wins. So there we go. That's an awesome goal to have, JD. That's an awesome goal. That's really good. Wow. Well, you're already, you know, you're already almost halfway there. Come on.
Oh, boy. It took me 14 years for this.
I have no doubts. I have no doubts. You'll be just fine, JD. Do you know Angel? Are you friends with Angel Cordero?
Well, and it's not like I'm friends. I know him when I went to New York, and of course every time he go with Johnny everywhere, like Delaware, Laurel for the big races, you meet him, and I talked to him when I went to New York in the morning. I think I got a coffee and I sit with him in the same table. Really cool person, unbelievable guy. But of course, who doesn't know Junior Cordero? I mean, he's awesome.
Yeah, you know, I'm trying to get him on the show here in the future, and I think I might mention to him that, you know, Angel, J.D. Acosta, he plans on beating your record, just for your information.
Yeah, hold on tight. I go for your record.
Oh, I love it. I love it. J.D., you mentioned you have three girls. Tell us about your family.
Well, I have my first girl. Her name is Jadianis Acosta. We mix my name with her mom's name. Abianez, she's already five. Now she started school. And the second one is Soidielis, she's three. She's actually right here with me in the car. And I have another one that she's 3 months. Wow. Her name is Señales. The names are kind of hard to say, but the mom makes the names. I don't make the names.
Yeah, I won't try to say those. I don't know if I would say them properly, but that is fantastic. Little girls, wow.
Yeah. What? I don't want to look for the boys. It's tough. Don't, people, stop saying looking for the boy. It's not going to happen.
Not going to happen. Do you think any of your girls, what would you say if one of your little girls came up to you one day and said, Dad, I want to be a jockey?
Oh, my God. That already happened.
Oh, no.
The middle one, I have an equalizer in my house. She jumped in the equalizer. When she was one, and I was so scared, I was like, man, she's going to get hurt. And she said, Daddy, I want to be a jockey. I want to be like you. I was like, oh, boy, no, please. I mean, my God. I mean, if they want to do it, I'm going to, whatever my girls they want to do, I'm going to support it 100% with my life. But, you know, me being a jockey, and it's tough. I mean, the girls right now, they're doing awesome. Everywhere, every racetrack you go, you see a woman doing it. So I'm happy right now because I see so many jockeys doing it.
Yeah.
Not like the old times, you know.
But, yeah. No,
it's just tough. And if they want to do it, I'll be supportive to my girls. I think Soidielli, the one in the middle, he's the one that they want to do it. So more than the other one. So.
Does she go with you to the racetrack? Does she watch the races?
Oh, my God, yeah. I took all my girls to every racetrack I go. They know every racetrack.
No.
Every racetrack that he rides, they go with me. And if I ride for the first time, I took him because that's something that I want to say for my girls, the memories. You know, pictures, they stay forever. But, you know, that's the memories that they're going to have. Oh, my God, I've been in the racetrack with Daddy. Daddy win over here. Daddy win over there. So that's one of the things that I want to have for my girls. They go with me everywhere Daddy goes.
J.D., we are all out of time. I can't believe this hour flew by. thank you so much for joining us.
Anytime. It's my pleasure.
Oh, it's been a pleasure having you join us today, J.D., and wishing you all the best. You know, hopefully I'll see your name out in California one of these days.
I hope so. It's going to happen. Trust me.
Thank you so much for joining us. All the best to J.D. Acosta. Folks, if you missed any portion of tonight's show, you can check out our website, horseracingradio.net, and Horse Racing Radio Network on iTunes. Don't forget, we are now on Sirius 219 XM 206, where you will find us next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. For our producer, Lee Delapina, I'm Christina McManigal. Thank you for listening.